At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Greasy Pigeon Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Sullivan, and with me, as always, I don't know what to make of this today. It looks a little Undertaker-ish over there. The one and only Kevin Trussler. Kevin, for those that can't see you, please explain what the hell I'm looking at.
Well, this is a day of mourning for all Bruin fans. We decided to sell the farm at the deadline, so I thought it was in the right spirit of the mood for me to have a dark look to me today. Dark glasses. I did spiff it up with a tie, but it's instead of the black and yellow, it's just black and white hat.
The tie is something to be seen. For those of you, check our socials. I'll make sure I put it up there. That is an impressive Bruins tie. I'm going to guess that it's not new, my friend. What era is that tie from?
That there is, it was dancing in the 90s, just like this guy.
It looks like it. You definitely had the ladies up in Ontario swooning over the Boston Bruins tie back in the day, huh?
You know, if I pulled that out, look out. Hide your ladies. Hide your ladies, fellas.
Exactly. Look out. So as Kevin mentioned, we are going to start NHL trade deadline, and we are going to spend a minute talking Boston Bruins, because whether you're a fan or not, what they did this trade deadline is something that, you know, you see in sports from time to time, Kev, for a team that does need that rebuild, right? They sell the farm, they try to recoup prospects and draft picks, and they try to start over. The Bruins went a step ahead, or above and beyond, I should say, by trading their captain. Teams don't typically trade their captain. Brad Marchand was, you know, the heir apparent after Patrice Bergeron and Zdeno Chara walked out of the building. He, for all the problems he had in his early and mid-career, he has been the poster child of a leader, of a winner, of an effort guy in the league for the last 5+ years without, you know, I can't even remember the last time he was suspended. I can't remember the last time he was talked about in any sort of negative, you know, online, the rat mentality still comes, you know, they still like to make fun of him for that. But honestly, he hasn't been that player in quite some time. Start there, Kev. What do you make of the Boston Bruins trading their captain, and how rare is that in any sport, never mind the game of hockey?
Well, we touched on it the last episode, right? Like, it was one of those things where, you know, I threw it out there thinking that could happen. Did I want it to happen? No. Would love to see Marshy finish his career as a Bruin, just as Bergeron did. But, you know, you're also looking at an organization that did it with Bork. You know, they did send him to win a cup back in the day and in the late 90s, 99 or 2000, whenever Colorado was able to get him a cup. You know, in this case, it's very rare, but when it comes to, you look at the recent history, John Tavares with the Islanders, right? You run the risk of when your captain is an unrestricted free agent, you know, you are coming up at the deadline, you're at the deadline and you're on the outside looking in. Do you make the gamble with the hopes that you can make a run at the last quarter of the year and get into the playoffs and maybe catch, you know, magic in a bottle and go on a bit of a run? Or do you try to at least get something specifically if the two teams are far off as far as signing a new contract? So, you know, in this case, I'd like to think it was done amicably. Everything I've seen and read, you know, the two sides did try to get together and, you know, they just couldn't agree upon terms. You know, at the end of the day, Marchand was able to go somewhere where he can have a legitimate shot at winning a cup this year. And then, you know, the Bruins were able to get at least some sort of collateral without playing the game of, you know, we wait until July 1st, you haven't signed, and then anyone can pick you up. So tough to see him go, heart and soul. I've always been a huge 63 backer. I think he's the type of person that every single team would love to have that guy on him. He sucks to play against, but once once you're once he's on your side, it's so fun to have guys like that on your team, because you know they are the ultimate team guys. They are they're going to have everyone's back, and they're going to play to the whistle and even pass the whistle if needed. And you know, it's tough to see, tough day for Bruin fans to see what happened.
I think it's interesting to trade your captain and trade your identity at that point a little bit, right? I mean, I watched, so this, we're recording this on Tuesday, March 11th, which happens to be the Panthers at Boston tonight. Marchand will not play. He's still injured. So no return of Marchand on the ice tonight, right? But I watched the game against Tampa Bay over the weekend, somewhere around March 9th or 8th, I think it was. The game the Bruins ended up winning 4-0. It was a 1-0 game. Swayman made an incredible save on an open net. Bruins extended the lead. Tampa pulled the goalie really early in desperation. They scored again. The game kind of looked lopsided. It wasn't. They had, the point of that is watching that game, they had one letterman in their roster, right? McAvoy's hurt. Marchand was traded. It was just the one assistant captain on the whole sheet of ice, right? Which is David Pastrnak. So right now the leadership core for the Bruins is next man up mentality, just like the bench is, right? And you look at who the Bruins got rid of from a veteran standpoint, right? So Brad Marchand is the leader of the group. Brandon Carlo, when he's healthy, is top four defenseman on any team in this league. He's gone. Charlie Coyle, Boston native, you know, they got him late in his career. He was always that third line grinder, did everything you needed him to do, put the puck in the net, maybe not as much as they wanted, but won every battle in the corner, back check, played defense first. Trent Frederick, who I said that on the last show, I didn't want Trent Frederick traded. He's only 28-ish, 26, 28, had a couple of years left, was right in the middle of, I thought, his career, part of the rebuild. I thought he'd stay, but there was a market for him, and teams wanted him, and they got a decent return on Trent Frederick. And then Justin Brazzo, again, he was kind of a journeyman guy, younger, but didn't really give you a whole lot. Off he went. He'll probably bounce around the league, you know, in the next couple of years. But what they got in return, you know, two prospects, 3, 4, 5, 6 players total, 4 kind of ready to go, you know, middle stats, your headliner, Jacob Lauko, old friend Jacob Lauko is back in the black and gold. They got a first round pick, a conditional second rounder that becomes a first rounder, 2 additional second rounders, right? A 4, blah, 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 blah. It was a great return day for a couple of years from now. Now, what do they do with it? Trade those pieces in the offseason, rebuild with some talent now, you know, sign some players and add to it. Cap space is there for them. They didn't have to retain a lot of salary. It's just interesting to see what the next piece is, but it's clear that the Bruins are in this retool, and it's just going to be interesting to see how fast the turnaround happens.
Yeah, I mean, every time, you know, I watched that game on television, the Tampa Bruins game, and saw Pasta's interview, and it's next man up, right? I mean, now you got an opportunity, and that's what the broadcast was saying as well, is you got guys that now have a chance to really show what they can do on the big stage, and you've got, you know, what, 20 games to make that happen, and hopefully, you know, who knows? There's still a chance that they could make playoffs. You know, being a fan, I don't know if that's the best thing that we want to happen. It would hurt our draft, you know, status, so to speak. But then again, getting a few more extra games with a younger squad, I think that definitely would help out. Look at what's happened with Washington this year, right? Like last year, they were in the same spot. They had to go on a heater and you know, scrape their way in. And yeah, they lost 4 straight to the Rangers. But you know, the experience that the young team that they had, or the young kids that they had playing in those 4 games of playoffs, I mean, they're a year ahead with seeing what it takes and what playoff hockey looks like, as opposed to being an outsider looking in. But you know, you're right, there's definitely some upside to some of the trades. The one with Buffalo I thought was interesting, getting the one Finnish D-man. Hopefully he can build off of what we saw in the Four Nations. And, you know, again, it's one of those, I think the mentality of the Bruins is it's never been just one person. It's very team. It's we, not me. And they've got some, you know, some strong pieces. Once Chuck McAvoy comes back, that's obviously going to be huge. And we'll have to see what Sway can do. He might be seeing a little bit more rubber than what he's been used to, but this is why he got the big contract, and hopefully he can weather the storm there.
You were afraid to try to say Henry Jokiharju on the podcast?
Jokiharju.
Yes, Jokiharju, yeah. A Finnish defenseman. He actually was in the lineup for that game, that 4-0 win in Tampa the other day, and I thought he looked really good. I know we saw him in the Four Nations. Finland was, you know, overmatched, as we talked about before a little bit. I thought he actually played a solid, you know, kind of third pair, D pair. I bet you there's room for him to move up on that roster, you know, with guys like Lauri and Witherspoon back there. He'll definitely see the ice. He'll get playing time. I think it's, and they got a, you know, almost a fourth rounder that they got rid of. So, you know, they traded a pick coming in, pick going out sort of deal, got a defenseman, not to replace Brandon Carlo, but at least even your numbers back out. And I thought he looked good. And Swayman looked good in that game also. He's been playing much better as of late. Darren Panger talked about his play and how, you know, the season started slow and his numbers are never going to recover because of the slow start. But realistically, lately, he's been playing really well. And we've seen that. The Bruins have been in more games. They're giving up the lead late. That their issue lately, their issue lately has been not holding on to that one goal lead late in the game, or giving up a 3-goal lead against Toronto, or, you know, Zadorov's broken stick in the slot against Carolina. Like, bad luck and bad breaks and bad hockey. And you make your own luck sometimes. Teams that play well, play well. Teams that are playing poorly, play poorly. And you look at, you know, again, where they are, Kevin, they've fallen even further. It's funny, they've fallen even further back. Like, there's more teams between them and that second wild card spot. They're technically now they're 4 points out of wild card two. Yep. And they, with two extra games played. So that really makes it 8 points out of wild card two. They're not out of it yet, but they're pretty much out of it. And now there's three teams in front of them. And the Islanders, with two games in hand, are only 1 point behind them. So realistically, they're looking at potentially being the seventh seed in the East before too much longer. The rebuild is here. I think they could spoil some opportunity. I think that's their role the rest of the way. You made a great point. Let the young kids get game minutes. Let the young kids, the new kids, get the ice time, get the experience, be in that push for a playoff spot. But go make someone's life miserable. Go, you know, go mess up Montreal, right? Let's get that rivalry back going. Two teams are out of it, clawing for a playoff spot, beating the crap out of each other. Like, that rivalry could use a reboot. Like, just don't lay down and play dead the rest of the season. Give us something to watch.
Yep. No, I agree. And it is funny looking at the East as a whole. I mean, the Sabres have two games in hand. That puts them, you know, three wins behind the Bruins if they win both those games. And, you know, we can either move up a little, we can stay where we're at, or, you know, God forbid, we could fall to the bottom of the East. And, you know, what does that bring as far as draft capital? I don't know. But, you know, this organization is way too prideful for it to happen. I think there's still enough veteran guys on there. I'm interested to see what Casey Mittelstadt can do. I know, you know, Buffalo Sabre draft pick, had a very good, you know, junior's career playing for the, you know, U.S. national team, just hasn't been able to really find his stride. And, you know, who knows, maybe a little bit of time he's had in Colorado, he can bring it back to Boston and you know, work with Pasta or work with some of the other guys and see if something can catch fire there. So you're also looking at a couple teams, though, too, Ottawa and Columbus, not used to being in the positions that they're in. So, you know, who knows what happens with those two teams. I know Columbus definitely playing with a heavy heart all year with Goudreau, with the Goudreau incident. You'd like to think that they can keep that momentum going and find a spot into the postseason. But, you know, the Rangers are there lurking, and Montreal, Detroit, those are two other teams that, you know, over the past few years have not had much success. So what happens to them in these final, you know, 17, 18 games?
You know, we all focus on the remaining 18 to 20 games, depending on which team is left, right? The problem is, to me, the Bruins aren't going to catch these teams now with 18 games left, right? There's only 36 points on the table, you know, if you do that math. The issue, I think, is all the points that they left on the table prior to now, right? The loss to Carolina, and some of these are overtime losses. So they got 1 point, but they could have had 2 points. There's multiple games in a row where they had late leads. They gave them up. They went to overtime and they lost. So now you've only got, say, 3 points out of three games instead of 6 points out of three games, right? 3 points would be huge right now. And you do that, you know, you lost both times to Nashville this year, both games to Nashville you lost. That's 4 points. Now I'm up to 7 points.
And convincingly, too. It wasn't even close.
You know, I'm up to 7 points just off the top of my head right now, and 7 points would put the Bruins at 73, which, surprise, surprise, puts them at wild card one. Yeah. Right? So, like, right there, there's five games that come to mind that already took place that would change the tenor of the whole season, and maybe changes your trade deadline. Maybe you're a buyer, not a seller. It changes the whole thing because you decided you couldn't beat Nashville twice this year. And Nashville, let me scroll down and scroll down and scroll down. And oh, there's Nashville, 55 points, third from the bottom, right? In the West. Like, and the only reason they're third from the bottom is because San Jose and Chicago are wretched. In the East, they would basically be 1 point behind Buffalo. So they're the bottom, and they're the bottom in the East, but the bottom of the West is just really bad. And I'm sure you go through any of these teams and you're going to find 8, 10, 12 points that every team wishes they had. You know, it's great, awesome. You can wish for points all you want, but I can realistically look at the Bruins and say, if Swayman started on time and didn't have his bullshit over the summer, there's more points early in the season. If they held on to late leads, and some of this is injury related, of course, and whatever, but there's more. I mean, you could easily add 10 to 12 points on this Bruins team, and they are far and away wildcard one, and maybe even fighting for a three spot in the Atlantic division, which, based on the top three teams in the Atlantic, good luck. They're all wagons this season. So again, we're going to focus on the remaining 18 games, but this was decided a long time ago.
Yeah. And whenever a season starts, it's why I always cringe when people say that, there's still a ton of season left. And in theory, yeah, that is correct. But in the body of the whole season, when it comes down to a handful of points and you look at, you didn't show up in, early November or the end of October, and you lose a point here, you lose a point there. That's the difference between making it into the dance and being on the outside looking in. And that's what makes it exciting. I think in any sport, in any regular season, it is the same. Obviously in other sports, if we look in football, completely different. There's only 17 games, so each game truly means something. Baseball, not so much with all the games that they have there. But in the end, if you are a game behind the wild card or a point or 2 points out of a playoff spot, look at your schedule and look at the ones that you gave away. And that's where good teams find a way to win those games or at least gain points. Bad teams find a way to give away points or not even get any points. So we're sort of in that lower half this year than what we have been in the past. There's been a lot more third period gaffes this year with our squad than what we've seen over the years. But hopefully, we get back to that Bruin way of winning and 200 feet, make it tough on opponents, specifically when you are going into the third period with a lead, you don't squander those. You shut the door. We'll see. But yeah, the top three in the Atlantic, I've been saying this to Panther, Leaf, and Lightning fans. Now the race is who's going to win that division, because whoever does not win that division, it is going to be a bloodbath. I mean, you're going to have a really good team going home. Not to say that whoever wins that division is guaranteed to move on to the second round, but I'd like to take my chances with one of the wild card teams than playing either, Florida, Toronto, or the Lightning in the first round.
It stands right now, Florida's at 83 points, leading the Atlantic Division, two up on Toronto. If the season ended right now, they would get Ottawa in wild card one. Washington would get Columbus in wild card two, again, separated by a point. So they could flip flop. New York could jump in there, knock Columbus out. Montreal could maybe eventually jump in there. They're 4 points back, so not looking likely, right? And then that would set up a Tampa Bay Toronto opening series in the Atlantic. And I think everyone at that point would hope for the Battle of Florida to repeat itself to get out of the division, which is unfortunate in the new way they do the brackets, where that's not an Eastern Conference final matchup. That has to be a round two matchup. And, then you're playing across the division for the Eastern Conference, right? Washington. A lot of people have Carolina written off right now in the other division because of their trade deadline, which we'll get to in a minute. A lot of conversation about how they made themselves far worse at the deadline for being a number two team in the Metro. Time will only tell, right? But just to button up before we move on to other teams and the trade deadline, Brad Marchand, 1,090 games, 422 goals, 554 assists for 976 points, plus 284, 1,100 penalty minutes, which are well documented, 36 shorthanded goals, all times Bruins leader in that category. A great player, probably a Hall of Famer, Stanley Cup champion, times one for right now. He will be missed in Boston, but it'll be interesting to see what the Bruins do next. And honestly, I'm going to be looking to see what Florida does the rest of the way. Because like I said earlier, the last week's show or the show before, when Boston's not in it, I don't hate watching Florida play the game. So it's going to be interesting to watch when Matthew Tkachuk is healthy and Marchand's healthy, and you put Reinhart and Bennett and Seth Jones, who they acquired in a trade, on the ice. Watch out in South Florida.
Yeah, no, it's going to be exciting. I think everyone wants to see Tkachuk, Marchand, and Bennett on a line for at least a shift or two. That would be a sight to see. Well, time will tell, though, bud. Time will tell.
Time will tell, and I feel bad for Toronto if that ends up being a matchup, because I feel like a healthy Florida line or Florida team with a line like that against the stereotypical playoff team that is the Toronto Maple Leafs. Just, I mean, can they do wedgies on the ice? Like, I feel like it's going to be a schoolyard fight in that situation.
Well, here's the thing. I do like with the Leafs, if Tanev gets healthy on the point, and, you know, I'm a Carlo fan. I think the Leafs' Achilles heel has been defensive play. And with them picking up Carlo, and again, hopefully Tanev can come back, and that makes their blue line that much more stout. And then you've got Marner, right? Marner's going to be playing for a huge contract. He's the UFA. Obviously had a huge Four Nations Cup with Canada, but he's been Casper the Ghost when it comes to playoff hockey. So, you know, if he builds off of what he did during the Four Nations, then it'll be interesting to see. And same goes with Matthews. Matthews has always been pretty good in the playoffs. You know, I think Nylander's the one that shines the most out of that group. If they're healthy and they get the goaltending that they had for most of the series last year against Boston, it's going to be interesting. Those three teams, man, it's going to be a fight to the finish.
It's going to be a battle, no matter how. It always is when you have to get out of your division. But this year, both, more so the Atlantic than the Metro, but both divisions are tight at the top. And that first round series is going to be some great hockey. And a Stanley Cup contender is going to get knocked out in both conferences. I mean, not to spend too much time on the West, but the West, because of the trades and where it is, you could have a Dallas-Colorado first round series, and one of the Stanley Cup favorites is all done after the first seven games. So again, don't love the structure, but don't want to dive too deep into that because that is a whole show for its own self. And I do want to take a minute, Kev, for our Tampa Bay Lightning fans. I know we have a lot of them that listen to us. So hello, Bolts fans. How y'all feeling about Yanni Gord being back in the building? Man, my phone was blowing up. The socials were blowing up for a guy that's a very good, but a role player at best. Man, these fans love some Yanni Gord.
They love him. We know what Yanni can do. He is, you know, 200 foot. He can PK. You can put him on the power play, put him in front of the net. You ask that man to do anything and he will do it all. Obviously, the fans here absolutely love him. You can't turn a blind eye as to what Tampa did at the deadline. It's crazy to see. And I love the fact that they're all in. You know, I mean, JB, their GM, he is a monster when it comes to let's win with what we have now, with the good players that we have now, and not worry about what the future holds with getting rid of draft picks. It's worked with them for a number of years. And again, you got a world-class goaltender in Vasi. We know what he can do. He can steal one or two rounds, three rounds for you. It'll be interesting. I know I keep saying that, but it is. It's exciting to see. I'm excited for the playoffs, specifically if I don't have a pony in the race, so to speak. I can sit and watch with clear eyes and not necessarily have the passion of a fan. I know my wife will be happier if that's the case, but nonetheless, it'll be time will tell. It'll be good to see.
Yeah, for sure. And looking at the Tampa Bay Lightning line combinations, right? Yanni Gord slides right back into his spot, third line center. Borkstrand slides right into second line right wing with Cirelli and Hagel. I mean, just when you pull Getzel, Point, Kucherov off the ice and slide Borkstrand, Cirelli, and Hagel on the ice, that's not a huge drop-off line 1-2. Where I think the issue could come in for Tampa Bay, their fourth line I don't think has the depth of some other fourth lines. You know, what Florida can roll over the boards all the day. Toronto, who knows? They're a skill team. They're going to beat you on the top two or three lines. Tampa Bay has to roll all four, and you know, you need that fourth line to drive that grit in the playoffs. You know, Glendening, Chafee, man, more of these last names. Number 28, Gergensons, I believe. You know, do they have that grit and determination out there to be that fourth line break that a team needs to go deeper in the playoffs? Again, time will tell, but I know the Bolts fans are ecstatic at what's happening in Tampa. And quite honestly, I'm excited to see the Battle of Florida at some point. Hopefully it gets there, buddy, because it's going to be a hell of a ride.
Yep, lots to see. I mean, hey, if the Battle of Florida happens in the first round, you know, does the Battle of Ontario happen then with Ottawa squeaking in? And, you know, you got Brady Tkachuk and the boys back in the playoffs for the first time in his career. Where do you see him playing his brother in the first round? How wild would that be? You know, it'll be, we got a few weeks left ahead of us. Lots to take place till we get there. Excuse me. Who gels with who first the fastest? That's usually the key when it comes to trade deadlines, right? When your acquisitions, who can jump in and just get accustomed to how the team plays, how they gel? Yanni Gourde going back to a system that he's had success in, he's got a leg up on that with that trade. For the other ones, there might be a bit of an adjustment, and we'll see, you know?
Absolutely, we'll see. And the picture will get clearer and clearer every week and every episode that we record, and we look at the stats and the standings and the changes, and more to come in the 2025 NHL season. Kev, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, stick around, parents. We're going to discuss some shakeup on the Tier 1 AAA youth hockey landscape in the state of Florida. Big things coming out of South Florida. Kevin and I are going to break it all down for you the best we can with the info we have. Stay tuned. Next in the Nest. Welcome back, everybody. As we mentioned before the break, talking a lot of NHL trade deadline stuff, there is some info coming out of Florida that just got announced, I'll say publicly and formally this week, last couple days. And again, we're recording this on March 11th, so somewhere in the middle of March this came out. I saw some conversation online on the Florida parent pages, a couple anonymous posters, which are my favorite, asking about AAA buzz in the Palm Beach area, what's up with the AAA conversation, so on and so forth. And I didn't honestly give it much thought or know what they were talking about. There's always conversations about AAA spring programs and AAA training programs, and maybe some program that thinks they're going to go AAA or that thinks they're going to go, you know, add a new null team and or a tier two juniors team or whatever. And then news came out that the Junior Panthers organization is somewhat tied to a new tier three junior program in the USPHL for next season. Undetermined if it's in partnership with the Typhoon, if it's going to replace the Typhoon, if it's going to just be two teams in one area, right? Who knows? More to come on all that through the summer, but that's not what we're talking about. What come out today was from a company called Longwood Hockey on Facebook. They put out a AAA vision, and it was a multiple kind of slide Facebook post, Kev, and somehow they're affiliated with the Palm Beach Breakers, which is a tier two double and single A program based out of Palm Beach. Very good program. We've played them multiple times in our time in the hockey community here in Florida. So somehow they're tied in with that. And what the post says that the Palm Beach Breakers have applied to CEHOF. CEHOF is the governing body for the state of Florida and all things youth hockey. So in some, you know, in New Hampshire, it's the Granite State League. In Massachusetts, I think it's the Massachusetts Hockey League. I'm sure, you know, Minnesota has one, so on and so forth. In Florida, it's called CEHOF. And they applied to CEHOF for a tier one charter to field a full component of teams for the 25-26 season. Real quick, what that means is you can't just like start a team. You know, Kevin, you and I can't just go rent ice at a rink, start a team, and go play in the league. You have to have certain number of teams at multiple different age groups. You have to be approved to join the league, pay your dues, pay your league fees. It's a governing body, so they regulate who can come in and how big they grow and all that stuff. So they apply to do tier one. Currently, I'm going to take a left turn, Kev, and I'll let you break this down with me in a second here. Currently in Florida, there's the Florida Alliance. They are the only sanctioned tier one AAA program in the state of Florida. They run, it appears, I tried to look to see how many teams they have. They obviously run U18s, U16s, and U14s. I was unclear if they're running all the way down to U10s or not, or U12s. I think they start at U14, Kev, but don't quote me on that. It could be the U12 division, but they run the AAA program, and they have a north and a south in most, if not all, age groups at this point, and that's it. So if you're in the Tampa area, there's one team to play AAA, and if you're in the Palm Beach area, there's one team to play AAA, your age group. That's 20 roster spots. That's 25 roster spots at most. A lot of these kids played together for a long time. It is heavily political. It is heavily connected. Tryouts are closed. Tryouts are invite only. There's a lot of secrecy around it. It's a very good team. They do well when they go play quality AAA programs out of the state. I do not knock what they do. I just somewhat knock how it's run from the CEHOF level, not the coaches and the parents and the kids that play for them. I'm not talking about the boots on the ground. The fact that CEHOF controls that and runs that at the tier one level, I think, is why this other program is looking to break in and expand the AAA opportunities to more kids in the state of Florida. So before I go on, Kev, I want your thoughts on just, you know, kind of that, the AAA program and the landscape and what that looks like, you know, down here in Florida.
Well, I think we've touched on it a little bit, you know, in previous shows where, you know, it's definitely grown over the years with our kids. My son, 18, going to be 19, aging out of the youth level. I know your son still has one more year if he wanted to do AU, but like at least during the time that my son was still in the local hockey market, You didn't hear much about it until a team was actually selected. And then when a team was selected, they kept that same team unless someone were to leave or it were to be political. By no means am I saying my son had the skill during the younger days to play on that team. But like it just didn't really make sense to me where it wasn't as public. And looking at it now, they've got a lot more things that are posted online. How they do the tryouts, I still don't know how that, is going down, how much of the team is already selected versus those that go and try out. Like anything, I mean, we've touched on it with just the tier two level, whether it be single A or double A. I think there's enough talent in the state of Florida to have probably more than one spot to go play. There should be at least two, I would think, down south and two here in the north, depending on the age groups and the numbers, of course. I think from the 16 and 14U, there's definitely going to be enough talent to compete. Is it true AAA? If we're comparing it to what they do up in Chicago and Detroit and Boston, New Hampshire, things of that nature, yes and no. I mean, they go and play tier one AAA teams, but the practicing on a daily basis and getting those reps in, that's where the biggest discrepancy is. Unless you have a number of kids that are in the local market, they're not going to get as much ice time, in my personal opinion, than what they would in other programs, just because there's kids that are coming from all over. The fact that the state is the one that run, Sayhoff is the one that's running both, the tier two and the tier one is interesting. I never really got into the true political landscape of it, but I know that this isn't the first time that there's been challenges or flags raised with USA Hockey. So it'll be interesting to see what the outcome is with this Longwood Hockey organization presenting it in front of USA Hockey.
Yeah, so I would agree. I think there's definitely talent, right, to your point, to have more than one team at each age group, kind of in each division, right? A north and a south, a north and a south, like whatever. I mean, I pulled up their My Hockey rankings for the whole organization. This year, the midgets, right, which are 16s and 18s, 15, 16, 18s, they all have over 90. They all have most of them have good winning records. One team looks like an outlier, right? But your 18U North team, 29 and 18, and the Tier One EHL League up north played well, so they can compete with the middle to upper tier. We're not saying they're Mount St. Mary's tier one, but let's be honest, no one's Mount St. Mary's tier one except Mount St. Mary's. Your Little Caesars and your CompuWare and your Junior Penguins, your Junior Stars, all those predominant tier one AAA programs are predominant AAA programs. CarShield might not compete with that program, right? I mean, just because you put AAA on your moniker doesn't make you AAA. I know that we lived that life in New Hampshire and New England for the first half of Sully's career up there, in youth hockey. Everybody's AAA, everyone's tier one. It's up to you to go play competitive hockey and grow your organization. With that being said, I think the bigger issue here isn't so much to me of not being enough talent or not being on the fun teams, right? So let me continue with the Longwood angle and kind of where this is going. Like you said, Sayhoff, we talked about Sayhoff being the governing body. They submit their application to Sayhoff to be a tier one program for next year. Sayhoff denies that program, and now Longwood has filed an arbitration in front of an independent panel within USA Hockey to reverse Sayhoff's decision. They say, this is a quote from Longwood, "We are highly confident in the merits of our appeal and unwaveringly optimistic in our belief that the needs of the sport and its participants will ultimately be prioritized in arbitration." I agree with them in the sense of the sport in Florida needs the competition. Sammy Terho has mentioned this before. The competition breeds more training, it breeds more coaches. If you're playing at a higher level, if you have more higher level organizations, you're going to get more people to play for these organizations. It will eventually grow. Now, whether you call it AAA, AA, single A, rec, CBA, none of that matters when you're 10, 12 years old. You got to play, you got to chase the ice time, you got to do the right thing and develop. Where it does matter is later in life. No one's going to, sorry to break it to you, no one's going to an 18A tournament in Charlotte, North Carolina in, February of your U18 age out year. There's no scouts there watching you. And I think everyone understands that. So to go to a AAA tournament on a AAA team, you will have people in the building watching your 16, 17, 18-year-old player potentially go for the next level, right? You still have to do the work and chase the combines and talk to the coaches and all that stuff still goes with it. But there is absolutely, you are absolutely in the door when your team says AAA and you're playing in a AAA bracket. Now, if you're getting your doors blown off, CarShield 43-0 at U14s in Michigan, no one's probably looking at you. right? But if you are competitive in some of these games and you have players that are producing against the higher talent, you will absolutely get looked at. And the letters at the end of your name at that point do, I think, matter.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about it when we were coaching, right? Like, you want to play up past, you know, what your competition is to see where you rank. But, you know, to go and be in a division where you know you're going to get your doors blown off, if anything, I think it benefits the team that is getting their doors blown off versus the team that's blowing the doors off. You know, you can learn a lot by losing, but when you're not in games at all, that makes it extremely tough. So, you know, going back to what you said about Florida, there's a lot of talent that has left the state, I think, because there hasn't been that opportunity. I'd like to think with the game growing as much as what it is, specifically now, even more in South Florida with the Panthers' success over the past few years. And then, of course, we've experienced what the Lightning's success has been here in the Tampa Bay market and, you know, within the greater Tampa Bay market. We're still seeing a lot of kids picking up and leaving when they do have another year or two that they could probably give to the area. But they have to have the option of being able to see if they can compete at the AAA level. So if you have a couple teams, and hopefully the way my hockey rankings are, they can monitor where you fit within that mold, will do best for the state of Florida. Silly season right now, right? Yeah, I know Nationals is still going on. That's coming up with a lot of the travel hockey and junior as well. But for those that have their season has ended, the wheels are already turning. And, you know, you've got mom and dad wanting to chase letters for kids that may not be ready for those letters. And then there's kids that are ready to make that jump, but, you know, mom and dad don't know where to go to have Johnny or Sally go and try out.
So let me ask you then, do you think, okay, so say this plays out. So say they get their charter approved and they become a AAA program now in South Florida. And let's say the Alliance are still the Alliance, because they will be. So now you have two AAA teams. Now the North Alliance, the Tampa area Alliance, they're going to stay Tampa. The South Alliance now has competition in their backyard. So theory, you water down one of the two teams become watered down because the players inevitably are going to have some split. Right, you're going to have some players split and you're going to water that down. Then you're going to have the next level up players, like to your point, maybe players now stay home. Maybe they were going to go play junior. They were going to go play prep school at 16. Well, hell, I'm going to go try out for this Alliance and Longwood because I have a chance to play local. They make that team. They stay here. Right. They do that. OK, cool. You're pulling now those kids out of AA. Right. So now there's openings in AA. So now A kids are going to move up. So you're going to water down AA maybe a little bit. But now you're going to have openings at A. Now you're going to have rec kids move. So right away, there's a downstream effect of having spots for your elite players to play to allow other kids a chance to play. And I don't care what you say, at 10, 8, 10, 12 years old, your letters mean absolutely nothing. I don't care what they are, rec, A, B, D, C, Q, F, Y, G, doesn't matter. You're playing hockey to develop. So you take a kid that's been playing rec or A because he hasn't been able to break in, now has a chance to break in at the bottom of a lineup. And we've had players like this in the past, and I won't name their names, but they never had a chance to play on a travel team. We bring them in, we try them out, they cut our roster, and then what do? They become a great lower end of the lineup, third line, fourth line player for us, and absolutely crush it at that point moving forward, and become a player that now plays three more years of travel hockey at the AA level, varsity, high school, and so on and so forth. They need an opportunity is all they're missing. And this is going to afford some of those kids that opportunity.
I would think so. I mean, you know, if you don't have enough kids to roster a AAA, a second AAA team here in Florida, well, like other true organizations throughout the U.S., maybe that who wouldn't want to come down to Florida and play? You know, maybe you have those bubble kids that are on the outside looking in Detroit or in Boston or in Chicago, and they've got ties to come down to either the Tampa Bay area or down into the Miami West Palm area. You know, it could go both ways, right? I mean, if you want to truly field a solid team, and specifically, I'm talking 18 and 16U, you're probably going to be pulling from more than just, you know, your local market at that point. But I know that's talking out both sides of my mouth as far as, you know, giving kids an opportunity or a chance. You got to remember, not everyone can afford the cost that comes along with the AAA programs, and, you know, not having a full league here that would be driving distance living in the state of Florida. There's a lot of costs that are incurred with travel on that. So, you know, it's just another thing to look at.
No, Kev, I agree with you completely. And joining us in the Pigeon's Nest, and I appreciate you joining us, Mark, kind of midstream of this conversation, is our old friend, Mark Grossman. Mark, as our quality reoccurring guests know, was on a much earlier episode talking all things Florida youth hockey landscape, former vice president on the board of the Tampa Bay Junior Lightning, hockey dad, volunteer extraordinaire, been around the youth game since your time in New York. So I think you can shed a lot of light from kind of the board and behind the scenes side on what we've been talking about with this. And I'll kind of get you up to speed on where we are, Mark, but I appreciate you jumping on and joining us this evening.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we've been talking about this Longwood hockey announcement that came out today, which I don't know if you've seen it or not. I know we were all working today and in the last couple of days, but essentially another charter has been applied for at the tier one AAA level in the state of Florida from an organization that has ties to the Palm Beach Breakers. And they were denied. Seehoff said no. So they have filed an appeal to USA Hockey and an independent board of arbiters to basically get that decision reversed. They go into this whole long post, and I shared it on our social. So if you haven't seen it, head over to Greasy Pigeon Podcast on Facebook, find us, give us a follow, and read this post slide by slide. But this slide, this is awesome, I think. So they're kind of attacking Seehoff. And if you play hockey in Florida as a parent and as a coach and as a board member, you've wanted to attack Seehoff at some point. They do a lot of good. They do some not so good. And some of their decisions seem completely out of left field. Some of their rules that they follow seem like they get made up in the run of the play. So I don't think I'm speaking out of turn when I say their anger resonates with a lot of parents. So what they say here is Seehoff's rule is that there will only be one tier one program and that the Alliance will be that program. And Longwood's claiming that that does not meet the USA tier one hockey standards on participation rate for many years running. As a result of Seehoff's rule, the state lacks a tier one program, and then they get into their spiel with a cohesive approach to development and training consistent with the mission and direction of USA Hockey. Mark, from your standpoint on the way Seehoff runs and forming teams and putting teams on the ice, can you speak to kind of that behind the scenes side of Seehoff and team management?
Yeah, I think, there's probably a few things there, right? Well, I mean, I saw the announcement. I certainly haven't dug too deep into it because, like you said, trying to get a little bit of work done, you know, where I can. I do like the idea, what you just read, that announcement kind of focused on, you know, being aligned with USA Hockey and that mission and those goals, because, right, I mean, that's something that, you know, Seehoff, particularly in their tier one program, doesn't do. And a lot of it, you almost can't blame them for, right? Because it's tough, right? I mean, they're pulling kids from all over the state, you know, I mean, at 14, 16 U, you know, whatever that, you know, the amount of practice per week, right? You can't get kids from Fort Myers to Jacksonville, you know, down to Miami on the ice, you know, three times a week. You know, so they go with their weekend model. You know, so I think, you know, my initial thought on this is, you know, will they be successful in Palm Beach? Who knows? But if they're not, hopefully they're at least bringing up, you know, certain discussions that really are long overdue with the way Seehoff has run AAA, right? And I think the last time I was on, we talked about some of those, right? Where, you know, if you're not making a Florida Alliance team at 12U, you know, good luck at 16U, good luck at 18U. I mean, I know it happens, but, you know, a lot of the teams that we see just seem to get entrenched at a young age and you know, the opportunities are not there. You know, so you know, I guess we'll see where this goes. You know, I've got some other thoughts, initially on a second AAA team that we can get into. You know, that's my initial thought, is hopefully it can at least bring up a conversation and you know, figure out what's broken the tier one model in Florida and see if the folks in charge can start to work toward fixing those.
Yeah, I would agree with all that. And I pulled up the numbers, right? And we've talked about this. I think the episode you were on, we kind of broke down some numbers by region, right? And this is the 23-24 season. This is a USA Hockey registration pamphlet they send out. It breaks it down by region, breaks it down by state and all that. This shows that Florida in that year, 23-24, registered 20 I'm going to call it 22,000. Make numbers easy. So 22,000 players, the most in the Southeast, the most in the Rocky Mountains, other than California, the most in the Pacific, the most in the Plains. That's Montana, North Dakota. New York has more, clearly. Minnesota has more, clearly. Michigan, Massachusetts, and Illinois, the only states that have more registered hockey players in the state of Florida. All those states have more than one tier one team playing AAA hockey. I know they do. And they again, have leagues that play AAA tier one hockey.
And that's youth, right? Youth only, not including, you know, the beer leaguers and what have you. Or
So that's total numbers. So I guess the 19 and overs wouldn't count, right? So rule number one is not to do math on live air. So I'm not going to break down the numbers. Well, but you're right, Kev. That probably changes the number quite a bit.
But it's still, you know, I'd like to think from a youth perspective that the numbers have definitely gone up, specifically with, like we said earlier, the success that Florida's had over the past 5-6 years, you know, having a team in the final, the past 5 years in a row, right?
Yes.
Says a lot about, you know, the game itself growing. And, you know, I know that there's new rinks that are opening up and other rinks that are scheduled to open up. So I would anticipate that number to grow even more. I don't know. Mark, my take, I think before you came on, I said to have a second tier one opportunity for kids to join. One, I think it's going to give more opportunity for those kids that might not have been entrenched at the earlier years with some of that, not to say clicks, but, you know, if you get in at that 10 or 12 U and you want to continue to play and progress, then usually you're going to have a spot on that team unless unless there's something that truly happens, an injury or someone leaves out of town or someone decides not to to play. But my thoughts are, you know, you have, if you've got four teams in Florida, you can at least have some regular season games where you're not having to travel on a plane. And I think it's going to bring more to the state overall. If we can keep some up tier talent in the state of Florida a little bit longer than shipping them out, I think that's going to bode well just for the hockey overall.
Yeah, you know, and that's why, while I think we're interested in this new initiative, right, and we certainly see a need for it, we'd be more excited if it was a coordinated effort, because I think you make a good point, Kevin, right? I mean, four teams is different, right? I mean, one team, I think, you know, is clearly not the answer, especially at the younger ages, right? I mean, when we're seeing 13-year-olds move up north specifically to play hockey, I think that's problematic, right? If it's happening, you know, at 16, 17, 18-year-olds, you know, I can see that, you know, a lot. You know, so if there could be a coordinated effort, right, where there's a team in Tampa, you know, a team in Southwest Florida, a team in, you know, in South Florida, you know, then maybe it starts to make sense. Because, you know, if you get two teams like this here, I mean, like, what problem are you really trying to solve, right? You're getting more kids to play AAA, but, you know, are they getting better coaching than they would at SFHL AA? Because there's some really good coaches there too, you know, as you guys know. So, you know, that's sort of where, you know, I'm kind of on both sides of the fence here. I certainly, you know, like the idea of somebody challenging the status quo, because I think that absolutely needs to happen, you know, but I'm kind of I have a bit of a wait and see attitude on, you know, where we go from here and, you know, how do we turn this in, right? Yeah, sure, this would make more kids get to say, I play AAA hockey. Would this new team truly be a tier one team? You know, because I know we did talk about that, right? Up north, everybody's, you know, there's
correct
selects and elite and AAA and, you know, Joe super duper, you know, 12-year-old kids.
Correct.
Right. So I think, yeah, I'm very interested to see the future discussion. I just, you know, part of me wishes it was being done, I guess, in a more constructive way rather than just, you know, and Jeff, you read it, right? The rule that there's one tier one organization and that's the Florida, right? I mean, like, stay off. I mean, you know, you kind of listen to what's being said out there and try to make it better. I wish that was part of what was going on at this point. Unfortunately, it's not.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, sorry.
No, you're 100% correct. And just, you know, this isn't some, from what I know, and all I know is what I read, and I haven't, and I hope, Kev, we actually got a text today that we may be able to speak to somebody that's involved in the Longwood organization on the show down the road. I welcome that, clearly, of course. And honestly, I welcome Sehoff representative if they want to come on and break this down and talk to us about this and give us some insight from truly behind the curtain you know, at Seehof headquarters, wherever that exists, and have that conversation, right? I'm all for allowing all sides on and let's talk it out, because it's only going to grow the game. And that's what all of our collective want is to grow the game. But this organization, according to what they put online, this isn't some fly by night, you know, parent or coach that wants just to make a name for themselves in South Florida. Their post says that they want this program in Florida to mirror their commitment in New Jersey, parentheses, Avalanche and Colonials. The New Jersey Avalanche are a perennial top five AAA program at multiple age groups, and the Chicago Steel in the USHL. So this organization has ties to tier one junior hockey and high level AAA hockey in New Jersey. And like I said, New Jersey Avalanche are always really good. So if that's the brain trust and the power and the commitment to the game that is trying to expand it here, that gives me much greater kind of warm and fuzzies than if it was a bunch of just, you know, wealthy parents that all get together because their kid didn't make some team and they're trying to build a rink and start a new program, which honestly is how like 90% of rinks get built in certain states, unfortunately. But that's truly how it works, right? And this doesn't sound like that. And maybe I'm completely off base and someone's going to comment online and tell us how we're a bunch of idiots, because this absolutely is some rich guy who's trying to run a program. But to have that resume means they've done something right in the past. And you know, I think that if they bring that to Florida and they get a fair shake and they don't get bamboozled and pushed around, that they could turn that into something.
No, yeah. I totally agree with that. I mean, that's, again, you don't want to be throwing names out there of organizations that have established track records and, you know, not be able to back that up. So, you know, to come in with a resume or at least mention that, I'm excited. Get your popcorn, as they say, in the funny season.
I think that's a good point that, you know, I saw that. I saw the affiliations, I think you said, with the Chicago Steel, right, and the New Jersey Avalanche. You know, that certainly gives them a lot of bit of credibility, and I certainly agree with you on that. I think, you know, but as we've said in the past, right, Florida's just different, right? I mean, you know, New Jersey, Chicago, you get on a bus and in New Jersey, 3 or 4 hours, you're in Boston or Philadelphia or Washington, right? There's tons of competition down there, and Chicago is pretty much the same way, right? You drive to Detroit, you know, you can get to, you know, around the Midwest, you know, in a day trip. You know, you put that, you know, down in Palm Beach and you're, God, don't do math live on the
exactly.
air. You are close. I'm guessing you're close to 1,000 miles from the nearest traditional hockey market, right? I mean, I don't know if it's, taking 75 up to Pittsburgh or, you know, whatever the case may be. There's certainly some challenges, but I agree with you that it's good to know that it's, you know, being led by somebody who's at least got some experience and appears to have a bit of a vision, you know, going into it, and, you know, not just, you know, people who were upset and yelling on a message board somewhere and decided we're going to take this on.
Correct. And there's plenty of that going on the current, you know, Florida hockey pages on Facebook that we all follow. There's a mix of emotions, right? The, well, now everyone gets to play AAA. People are out there. And then there's other people that think it's like I do that truly think, I think we all do that truly think it is good as a growth angle of the game. And that was our post. Growth is never bad. It's not up to Seehof. And I'd like your thoughts on this, Mark. To me, it's not up to Seehof to dictate how many programs you can have. It's up to Seehof to regulate that they're run properly and that they fall within the bylaws of Seehof hockey. If they think that they can field their required 4 or 6 teams or whatever it says in the bylaws, and they have the money to fund 4 or 6 teams, and they have a rink to put the kids on the ice, and they want to be tier one, it's up to the organization to put a competitive tier one program on the ice to then grow that program so they get more players next year, more players the year after. Most likely they're going to be bad their first couple of years. Look at the Seattle Kraken and the Utah Hockey. Every team other than the Vegas Golden Knights, basically every team comes out as an expansion team and sucks for a couple of years, and then they get better. That's not up to Seehof. The NHL doesn't say, sorry, you can't have a team because you're going to be bad. They say you can't have a team because you didn't meet these rules and these guidelines. So I'm just curious, you dealt with Seehof a lot, Mark, and I don't want you to air out dirty laundry and get yourself in trouble. But in your runnings with Seehof and your thoughts on the way they run the show, are they too involved in owning all things hockey in Florida? Or do you think that they're pretty right on with where they are?
No, I tend to agree with you that they are involved in a lot of things, you know, that surprised me when I first moved down here and got, you know, involved in youth hockey here. Up in New York, where I was a board member before that. The Northern New York Amateur Hockey Association, they were involved in helping their member organizations, right? And that's something I just don't really see from Sehoff, right? I mean, Sehoff is running SFHL, you know, getting down to the tier two level, right? Running it and making rulings, you know, that are oftentimes not in the best interest of member organizations, right? And that's where I won't dig too deep into that. But whereas their concern generally seems to be kind of all over the map and focused a little bit too much on actually running teams, right? Let your member organizations run the teams. Let member organizations build a girls program, for example, right? We don't need Alliance tier two girls programs, in my opinion, right? I mean, these are, you know, girls, and for example, I'm just using this as an example, girls who are newer to the program a little bit, right? They're newer to hockey, right? They're not, you know, they've got a ways to go if they're going to get to, you know, an NCAA level or something. So let's build teams so that they can play other kids in Florida, right? There's no need to get on a plane and go to the Midwest or the Northeast or wherever, you know, 10 times a year. Personally, I'm with you, Jeff. I'd rather see them kind of have more of a role supporting their member organizations than, you know, trying to run these teams themselves. Because what happens is they wind up competing with their member organizations. And that is absolutely, as a board member, like you said, for TBJL for the couple years that I was there, that was one of the biggest concerns I had, was that, you know, we couldn't set tryout dates. We couldn't sign players because they had a tryout system that was not public knowledge. So we had no idea which kids were going to, you know, bail on us when they got an offer 2 months down the road from a Sehoff team. It's kind of long-winded. I think I'd like to see them a little bit more focused on, you know, supporting teams, supporting, getting them to help develop their teams and so forth.
So the one thing that I'll jump in real quick and just say, like, and I know I've been out of Sehoff for the past couple of years now, but the one thing that they have done, you know, since our kids have exited, is they are trying to, I guess, level the playing field. If there is multiple tier two single A travel teams, I think they're trying to at least keep the competition at a competitive rate when it comes to controlling how many teams you can have and all that. Mark, you would know a heck of a lot more about that than I would. But at least what I've seen, kids, if they do want to play travel, and whether it's just light travel and it's, you know, you're playing within a 30-mile radius, because in Tampa you can have so many clubs within that radius, hopefully you're playing competitive against each other and not, again, getting the doors blown off 42-0 in a playoff game. And for those teams that are doing really well, and, you know, you can test yourself by going and playing at the AA level in tournaments and test yourself that way. But I'm going off a little bit on topic, but maybe pumping Sehoff's tires a little bit. They're trying to grow the game. I know that they tried to keep it at a minimum for so many teams at the travel level, single A level, but more kids and parents want to have that taste of travel to see if they can, you know, if their kid can hack it and if it's something that they want to do, you know, moving forward longer term. They've done a pretty good job that way, in my personal opinion, from what I've seen from the outside looking in. Keep in mind, when I was in it, I was really only paying attention to the age group that, you know, we were focusing on at that time. You know, I would hear the trials and tribulations of other age groups from parents, but while I was in it, you're focused on what you're doing at the task at hand, not what Mark was dealing with. When I left his office, there was at least another, you know, 5-6 line people in line waiting for him.
Mark had all the answers back then, and he provided us all the answers we needed today. Mark, I do appreciate you coming on and taking some time to kind of break down some of the behind the scenes with us on this. And I'd love to have you back on. Hopefully we can talk to people from Longwood, get some more answers from what they're trying to do as a program, get some answers from USA Hockey on the future of the tier one in Florida, and then, you know, have you on to break it all down with us in a future episode. Cause I appreciate your insight, your knowledge, and you have a side of the game that Kevin and I do not have. So we appreciate you bringing that to us and our listeners.
All right. Thanks. Sounds good. I'll stay tuned and listen while you have those conversations. I'm eager to learn.
Absolutely. Just like we said during the last segment, we are excited to wait and see what's next, right, Kev?
Yeah. That's it. Coming weeks, well, to, you know, playoffs, and then true silly season happens, right?
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. So silly season. We're going to wrap up this one. Kev, until next time. Great show again today, bud. We'll catch you all later in the nest. Cheers.